Welcome to Through the Word, leading you on a journey through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. Today, Peyton Jones guides us through the Old Testament book of Leviticus. Now to Pastor Peyton.
Leviticus chapter 22 today on Through the Word. This chapter again is about clean and unclean, and it tells us you have to keep them separated. Years ago, McDonald's came out with a special hamburger called the McLean. It came with a long styrofoam container with two compartments that, quote, kept the hot side hot and the cold side cold. It was a novelty and sold a lot of burgers, but in the end, you just had to put the two sides together to make the hamburger to eat it. It kind of defeated the purpose. In the end, McDonald's stopped making the McLean because they realized nobody really cared about keeping the hot and cold separate on a hamburger. It just didn't matter. You'd mind, however, if the same gloves used to clean the toilet were used to make your McLean burger. That's the importance of keeping the clean and the unclean separate, and chapter 22 is all about that. You could say that chapter 22 is the flip side of chapter 21. In chapter 21, God warned the clean priests not to be polluted by the unclean things. But now in chapter 22, he tells the priests not to pollute the clean things with them or their uncleanness. God knew that at times the priests themselves would become unclean and they'd be tempted to cut corners because it was a pain in the butt, after all, to go and clean yourself up at the end of the day. It's in our nature to want to take shortcuts. Therefore, God warns them, you got to keep them separated. Verse 1 and verse 32, the opening and closing of the chapter, speak of the priests not profaning God's name by their behavior. Verse 2 says, speak to Aaron and his sons so they abstain from the holy things of the people of Israel, which they dedicate to me, so that they do not profane my holy name. Did you hear that phone ringing in the background? That's kind of what it's like when unclean stuff headed into the worship of the priests when they were doing clean stuff. It messed everything up. Why was God concerned about profaning his name? Well, his name is kind of like his reputation. You could say that it was his honor. And he wanted his reputation to be that he was holy. Therefore, if uncleanness came into this worship, people would miss the concept of holiness and misunderstand who he was and the sacrifices that need to be made. In other words, sin was serious, so serious that he was going to have to send his son Jesus, and he didn't have any room for people to mess around with that. And at least in their eyes, it would cost the death of an animal, and that was a serious deal. Sin was costly, but so was holiness, and it wasn't something to be messed around with. Remember that Jesus asked us to pray in his name, and in fact, the first part of the Lord's Prayer was, "Holy is your name." Therefore, the chapter is broken down into three sections so that the priests can be really careful not to contaminate clean things by their uncleanness. The first section, verses 1 through 9, emphasize that a priest who has been made unclean cannot serve in the tabernacle until he's clean again. These verses list off all the ways that the priest can be made unclean. For example, touching a dead body, a leper, discharges, or an unclean insect, a swarming thing like a bee. Getting a bee sting could stop you, or roadkill. The second section, verses 10 through 16, defines who can eat the holy things. Verse 10 reads, "A layperson shall not eat of a holy thing." Could a priest's slave eat of the holy things? Could his daughter if she marries a man who isn't a priest? Things can get complicated in the real world, and God gives some real-world instructions. The third section, verses 17 through 30, reemphasize that sacrifice cannot have a blemish. The sacrifice you offer must be perfect. Verse 19 says, if it is to be accepted, it must be a male without blemish. That was the guide. That was the rule. But God goes on to list things that would qualify as a blemish. If the sacrifice was blind, mutilated, scabby, infected, or a disabled animal, it was not acceptable. God wanted the sacrifice to represent us giving our best. Obviously, you would sacrifice a blind or a disabled animal. After all, it wasn't your best. You could afford to lose it. It was kind of sad that you had it in the first place. But God gave his best when he gave his son. And this sacrifice represents God giving his best for us, Jesus, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. God did not hold back when he came to making the actual sacrifice for our sins. Therefore, the symbolism in the temple worship had to be exact so that people knew, I'm giving of my best. This costs me like it costs God himself to make a sacrifice for our sins. At the end of each section, God tells them that if they refuse to obey the rules of cleanness and uncleanness, they will, quote, bear the sin for it and die thereby. Or as verse 16 puts it, they will bear their iniquity and guilt. This is where we get the concept of bearing your own sin or carrying the guilt of it. The sacrifices themselves allow us to believe that somebody else can carry our guilt for us. However, although they can, it doesn't mean that they will. In fact, our own self-seeking nature shows us that we would rather kill an innocent animal to save ourselves. Don't believe it? Well, you do it every day when you eat a hamburger or a piece of meat. We're eating meat farmed to keep us alive. You'd offer sacrifices if you knew it would save you from hell. You may not agree with me. You might think, I love vegetables and I hate killing animals. But studies have demonstrated that when most people get into a pinch, they'll do just about anything to save their own necks. In fact, some studies have demonstrated that most people in a falling elevator instinctively attempt to crawl on top of each other in order to cushion the impact and save their own lives at the expense of others. A drowning man likewise will drown anyone who attempts to save him because instinctively the survival instinct is so strong that he'll push someone over if it means he can survive. Maybe you've never thought that about yourself. But next time you're in an elevator, look right and look left and think, these people would all kill me if it meant that they could survive. It'll make for a fun ride. What if there was someone who willingly became the sin bearer for you? What if there was someone willing to cushion the impact for you? Someone who is willing to be drowned under the depths of God's wrath in your place? Who took the crushing weight of sin like a power lifter and had it topple on top of him and crush him to death? Like Keith Green once famously said, most people don't find out until it's too late that someone has to pay the price. You could pay it yourself or let someone else, but who would be that nice to pay a debt that wasn't his? Well, I know someone like that, and he's your best friend. He really is. He really loves you. And of course, he's talking about Jesus. Paul marvels at this in Romans 8 when he says, for scarcely for a righteous man would one die, but sometimes, occasionally, someone might die for a good man. But God demonstrated his love for us in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Read Leviticus chapter 22 today, and as you do, imagine all the ways in which we as unclean people can mess this whole thing up and be glad that God gave you a sinless, spotless sacrifice who not only died for you, but was willing.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time.